Blog Talk Radio.
Watching you as you dream, the dreams I thought I knew. Your smile shows the reason. I watched it all come true. Your touch is cold and distant,
and welcome to What the Flock. I am your hostess, Pretty Bird, and our fabulous intro music was written by our very own Jay Hatter. That was The Word You Cannot Say, with the musical stylings of Shout Even Shy. Tonight on What the Flock, we are talking all things nefarious, and if you want to follow along with the wonderful poems that we will be listening to and reading and discussing tonight, you can find them on allpoetry.com, which is the world's largest online poetry site. And within there, we are a team of voices. We are a group of people that gather and share their talents of words and poetry, sharing their emotions. And it's a generally good time with fabulous people. So if you like what you hear, come and join us. It is free, by the way. And tonight we have with us so far Mr. Rack and Four. Say hello, hello.
Hello, hello.
And we have Ms. Sky Darkholm. Say hello.
Hello.
And we have the notorious Ms. Sweet Pea. Hello, hello, my dear.
Hello, hello.
Oh, with a voice. So tonight, we are talking all things nefarious, a little wicked, a little criminal-minded, a little less than upfront and honest. And I love that the word nefarious breaks down to be, you know, not God's law, which was the law of the land way back when, you know, things, you know, whatever. Anyway, so now it basically just means wrong. So people have no qualms about doing wrong, treating people wrong, doing things that are, you know, morally inept. And I know many, we all know many, all of us have a little bit of not so good in us. It just usually takes a little bit to make that bubble up to the surface. And the way I see it is this: if I'm going to do something crappy to you, it's because I've warned you 10,000 times I'm going to do something crappy, so stop being crappy to me. But, you know, I'm just saying, I'm usually nice, and I'm usually very logical, very fair, very, I will listen, but not if you're going to be yelling at me. I'm that kind of girl. But I know that at least me, and I can't speak for everybody, but I know that I have a very twisted fantasy life in very many different ways. And while I'm not one to want to basically skin somebody alive emotionally, in my fantasies of things that I would do, I would play them in public a little bit and feed them to the animals. So, you know, I get by on you know, my mental acuity, basically.
And lucidation.
Well, there is that, because, you know, scooping out the eyeballs is one way to go. So what about you guys? What does the word nefarious bring to mind for all of you guys?
Conceited, calculated, darkness, coy.
I think of Jafar from Aladdin.
See, there's a certain amount of selfishness that goes hand in hand with that word to me, and it's a very human thing. Like, I'm not talking, like, for me, to be nefarious, you have to be a person. You can't, it's not about any otherworldly creatures or whatnot, because demons are demons, imps are imps. This is, by definition, they are who they are. But people, I would like to think, and most of us would like to think, that people are generally good. So when they're so selfish that the ends justify the means, no matter what, whether it's emotional gains, whether it is monetary gains, whether it just wants to feed their, you know, sociopathic tendencies, whatever it is, it's very selfish and just reeks of deception, you know? Like, even if they don't outright lie, people ain't going to know the whole gosh darn truth, and they are not going to be trusted. I am just saying, and I don't do well with untrue. I am of the faction, and anybody who has listened to me for any length of time knows, I respect honesty above all things. And if you let me continue to believe something that is untrue, even if you did not say it outright, then it's a lie of omission. It is still a lie. You still let me believe something false. It is not okay. As you know. So those who don't have any qualms about what they do to other people, in spite of other people, they don't necessarily have to be narcissistic, but there's a certain amount of ego that is involved in thinking that your crap does not come with a stink bag. I'm just putting that out there. But I have not heard from Sky. What comes to mind when you hear the word nefarious?
I would say the same thing. I think that everybody, you know, has, I think motives, people who have darker motives, you know, who have ill, you know, darker motives or ill intent, to take advantage, definitely, and for purposes that are, you know.
Lawful evil.
Lawful evil.
It's almost like, you know, there is no ill-gotten gains. You're just gained, however you got them. And speaking of Dungeons and Dragons, Miss sky. Let me tell you about my nerd. So I struggled between Thursday and Saturday. I struggled to reconcile in my own brain that I am lawful good. And up until version 4, you could not have a lawful good fart. So this is my old age showing. I was struggling with what the heck. And then I'm like, okay, maybe I can, you know, swing something like, you know, James Bond, who does bad things for good reasons, yada, yada, blah, blah, blah. Then I went full nerd, and I was going to go all scaldic poetry with the whole Norse whatever, but I couldn't find one in English. And then my dog started having seizures real bad, so I bet that was that. But I had every intent to go full nerd on your show. just so that you know.
Well, you still have your chance, because I do one.
Really?
I do a D&D every 2 months. It's the last week of every 2 months. So if I used to do it the last week of every month, but then I had to slow it down because I have too much stuff that I want to do. But so if the last one was in April, then the next one is in June.
Yeah.
And I believe it's the wizard. But if you want to bring me a bard poem, you bring me a bard poem. But we are doing the wizard next time. But you can bring whatever you want. But it's every 2 months.
Well, back in the day, didn't bards used to have to use wizard magic anyway?
Yes, you can still do that, yeah. So and you can do whatever you want. Just bring me a poem, you know, and it's every 2 months. And we're going through all the classes, and, yeah, it's just fun. So there's still plenty of opportunities to geek out.
They're Vikings?
So. What about the Vikings?
I was asking Sky if they were Vikings.
I don't have Vikings on my list.
Okay.
But you can do whatever you want. You can do whatever you want. Bring me some. Just bring me a D&D poem, you know?
But Vikings are known to be nefarious, so there is that.
They will rape
and pillage and take and no remorse at all. That's kind of, you know, we will we'll do what we want when we want to, damn it. And I don't understand that whole concept. It's like Cruella de Vil, you know? I mean, I love me an evil Disney, I do, but I love them because they are so different than me. Like Ursula is going to just be the trickster that she is and steal the voice and do the this and do the that and yada, yada, blah, blah, blah. And I'm just like, you know, because I could never, you know. But I'm like, well, look how much fun you have when you're evil. And then, you know, thanks to Disney, evil doesn't win. So then there's that.
Yeah, I always liked the evil with, like, the past reasoning of why I might be just the my love for things like psychology. But there was a show, and I know Sweet Pea knows it, the Once Upon a Time on the ABC, they did this whole series.
Love that.
And yeah, and I loved it because they took character, you know, underrated villains that were never really expounded upon, if you look at it. And they gave them a background. They gave them a history. They made them tangible, and they told the story of what turned them to the darker side. And it just really, I love things like that. I love the idea of delving into someone's backstory to figure out what happened, where it happened, why it happened, what were the reasons behind their motives, whether evil or not. And I just like that it did that. So, I enjoy things like that. So, I mean, what puts the wicked in wicked, you know?
You know, when it comes to things,
are we all that vulnerable to it, you know? Are we all vulnerable to be, you know, if you say nefarious or that word, are we all vulnerable? You have to find
absolutely
those right steps. Do you know what I mean? Like, you literally have to if you put yourself on different steps or a different path, or if certain things happened, you know, what was it that saved you from being that if you were on that path? You know, these are the kind of things that interest me. So it, when it comes to characters, but it also is very relatable to life. So when you think about Nefarious, you think about, well, what steps did they get, and what steps would you need to get to that point? You know,
Sweet, did you say something?
So oddly enough, my phone covers that.
Oddly enough, you're what? I'm sorry, my phone is crap.
My phone.
Here.
Oddly enough, my phone covers that.
Oh, that's awesome. And my thing is, because I, you know, me and psychology are whatever. I have a history. It's not a personal. I am, you know, fully whatever history. It's just that's what I went to school for. And in order to balance my brain from the giant abstract things, I then minored in law for all the minutiae, because I'm crazy that way. Anyway, so my question, or what I find most interesting, is what part of that is environment and how you and poor coping skills, and what part of that is your genetic/personality markers that lean that way? Now, I am very funny, because when it comes to characters, I want my good to be 100% good. I want my bad to be as bad as they can be, with the exception of Anakin, because it's Star Wars and he gets a pass, and I like that he ended up good. But generally speaking, I like my bad to be bad, and my good needs to be as good as possible, unless they fall into those reluctant heroes, i.e. Han Solo and whatnot, where they're supposed to be bad, but really they're not. But that's pretty much everybody is. They think they're one thing, and sometimes, you know, for whatever reason, they walk that line. But I was having a conversation with my 16-year-old about Superman, because I will never, ever, 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 ever forgive the Man of Steel for killing Zod, because Superman doesn't kill people. He is 100% good all the freaking time. I don't give a crap. It ain't happening. I don't like him. I don't like that him as Superman. I don't like that movie. It broke me.
What movie? Man of Steel.
I love me some Superman. I love Superman. I love all kinds of Supermans. I love the Superman. But when they made that Superman super angsty. Yeah, and first of all, once Superman goes to the Fortress of Solitude and learns all the things he needs to learn, he does not shirk his perception of responsibility. He doesn't go hiding, being a logger somewhere, doing little tiny things. He is up in it. And not only did he not do that, he then killed Zod. And I get it's the lesser of two evils, but Superman could have just laser cut his legs off. Because, you know, that's better.
Yeah. That part.
But yeah, so I have issues. Yeah, I don't forgive them.
It did break my that scene still, it gets me.
Well, I need my good to be good, and my bad to be bad. And in that, I am okay with people doing what they have to do for the greater good. I am just, but not if you're doing it when there's other things that you can do, that you don't have to do the bad thing. It's just a quicker, you know what I mean? I'm very ridiculously black and white when it comes to things, so my apologies. However, Miss Sweet Tea, you said your poem is of the psychological whatever we were talking about 2 minutes ago. And I think that is all.
That's sort of kind of
you.
Oh, okay.
Oh, but you can talk. You know me. We can drop all
no,
that off.
It just kind of covers that weird how it might go that way, how you go from being one to the other.
See, that's awesome.
Here's a heart's knowledge.
Hmm.
She felt the storm. She felt the storm, the ache of her left shoulder, and smelled the pending destruction, the taint of the salty air. And the sea had darkened to shades of a bruise on the second day. storms and lyres, nefarious creatures, tricksters who play coy with their prey, slow and steady or wicked and quick. A path of devastation lay in their wake, without an ounce of shade. Skies kiss a raven's feather, thundered as the crow cawed. Raindrops begin to drip drop and fall in teardrop memories. She hoped this time she could cry out all the pain. The storm's hail shattered glass, and machine gun sounds blasted at wooden shield. Inner battles raged on as she screamed profanities at her weaknesses for glass slipper dreams. She swallowed the knowledge of betrayal and trapped it deep inside her heart, but it festered, and she became the storm, leaving destruction in the path. He loved her. End poem.
Well, that sounds like me. Kindred. This breaks my heart. It breaks my heart because it is uncomfortably familiar, and it is lovely, and it is dark, and it is painful. She felt the storm in the ache of her left shoulder and smelt the pending destruction and the taint of salty air. The sea had darkened shades of the blue of the second day, and I've got a love affair with the ocean. It cleanses me. And to have that calm, that just twisted into the reflection of pain, speaks volumes. And she screamed profanities at her weakness for glass slipper dreams. Let me tell you what. I am all about the fairy tales. Like, I believe in forever, and I believe in the hope of happily ever after. I also am logical-minded, and I know that happily ever after is a fight. It is not just a given. It is both parties tooth and nail. And when you have some foundation points that alter a relationship in ways that make that ground less solid, you know, for a less, when you were younger or when I was younger, and for a lesser dream, you know, you walk away eons ago. But when that hope is forever, when you have put everything in, you know, it feels like weakness. It feels like, well, if I was a stronger person, this would be done. And that's not where the strength is. The strength is in the fight. It's in the working through. It's in the getting to the other side. I mean, it sucks. Healing sucks. It's a journey sucks. It is painful, and you feel like crap, at least in my experience. But the other side of that is hopefully a stronger foundation. But in the middle, that whole, she screams profanities at her weakness for glass slipper dreams. And not for nothing. I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm all woman, but I tend to have a masculine personality in that I'm a little strong-willed, I'm a little big mouth, I'm a little, I give no crap. But every time I feel girly about something and that ends up in tears, I feel weak as all get out because I've never bought into the weaker sex. But when I cannot control when emotions come forth, because I'm a very emotional being, then it feels like weakness to me. And it's not. Emotions are not weakness. And this screams to me in that familiar pain of a journey that feels like it has no end, that you claw tooth and nail to get to the other side just to stop breathing your own sink. You know what I mean? And it's just, he wrote this beautifully, just beautifully.
Thank you.
And Sky, what are your thoughts?
Well, I thought this was an excellent piece. And
And I think it's perfect, actually, for the topic that we've been talking about. You know, how people kind of shove things down and bottle them up and let them fester, as you say, until they become rageful themselves, that transition, that learned, and you can see it, and I won't get into too much of that, but, you know, that learned behavior, if someone being pushed into this corner, you know, sky is black and raven's feather thunder, and the crow cawed, you know, raindrops began to drip drop, I love that part, crow cawed and began to drip drop, fallen teardrops, teardrop memories, that in a structure kind of way, looking at that line, it's very beat, it has a beat to it, and I like that inner line beat, but it also is very descriptive. And the storyline behind it is very powerful. And when you're doing this a contest for this really psychotic person here who keeps begging you to enter, make sure that you put something in the author's notes that says the quote you used so that you can
Okay, yeah. I forgot my quote. Yeah, I know what quote I used. Something about in my heart, knowledge in my heart.
Judging. But I think it's quite brilliant, and I think it does speak a lot of the lines that we've just been talking about, actually, which is weird. I just went off on a thing about it, and there you are with a poem. So, brilliant.
Perfect. And Rafi Gore, what are your thoughts?
And there she is with the poem. Yes, you could always count on her for that. You know, the thing for me when it comes to love, it's like a promise wrapped in a lie almost in a lot of ways, because there's the idea, there's the hope, but, you know, at the same time, you want to have faith in that promise and what's being offered, but it kind of gets snatched away from you. Part of the beauty of it is, you know, when someone, it's not an obligation that somebody's fulfilling. It's something that they give you. And, you know, when they turn around and they kind of snatch it away and they make it a lie, it turns everything into this, like, tragically ugly, depressing, sad thing. So, yeah, I could kind of relate to your teardrop.
And let's say hello to Mr. A.P. Taylor. Did you get a chance to hear it? Because I wasn't in the studio when I was all enthralled. Did you say yes?
Hello, Pretty Bird. How are you?
Hello, I talk a lot. I'm in a mood tonight. I am good. How are you?
I'm recovering from my latest little misfortune, but I'm fine.
What did you do? Oh, my God.
Had a fall in a shower, Pretty Bird.
Are you broken?
Yes.
Oh, no. I'm so sorry.
Yes, I am broken. But I will not go into the horrible and gory detail, therefore. It would only make everybody feel worse, and that is not going to help anybody. So I'm not going to go into what I did. I'm just going to say that I got broken, and I'm recovering.
Are you on the good pill?
Yeah.
Because so long as you are not in pain, then it is okay.
I have received at hospital emergency some perfectly good Plexia tablets, which are restricting my pain and sending me to sleep every time I take them.
Well, a little of this, a little of that.
You know
nice
whatever rocks your boat.
Pain-free and productive. But
yeah, no,
but,
I'm pain-free but unproductive. But that's okay. That's fine. You know, pain-free I'll take.
Yes, sir. Did you get a chance to hear Sweet Palm?
I did.
And
I've got to say, Sweet is in a rare sort of vein of form at the minute, and she used Nefarious quite beautifully. There is this sense of Nefarious being sort of tricksters is a really good word around nefarious. It's interesting because the use of nefarious in an American sense is more of a trickster or a guise or something, whereas nefarious in an English or Australian type sense is somebody who's completely horrible and has no ethics or will at all. And so,
oh,
I
it's
thought
the same
the,
here.
Yeah. Okay. Well, there you go. So, but I really like the use of it. I love the image, particularly. But I really like the poem and the use of the word. Sweet.
Thank you very much.
I put my little piece up on the board. Do you have to read and run, or do you have a minute, AP?
I've sort of got about 10, 15, if that's okay. So
I can read mine, then you're next?
Yep, works for me.
Oh, that's perfect. Okay. So me being still sluggish in the creativity department, I brought an old that I wasn't generally all about nefariousness, but it worked for me, so this is how it goes. This is, I'm a genius, damn it, or so I've been told. I have but one demon, my muse, my bravado, my demise, and his ego could choke a horse. So I'll keep him well lit with single malts and hope that smooths the raw edges of words that bite too damn hard. He spews his junky hangover nonsense in my hand, and it flows too fast to catch. So I ride his coattails into 2 days from now, when I forgot that words felt things that I never wanted to remember. There in the black and white, he stares at me, a cool reflection in smoky haze, and this bar ain't no place for a lady. Secondhand smoke feeds the addiction, and he rebels against Midori sours and any so-called drink that embarrasses itself with the word breeze or an umbrella. No. He steals in bitter jiggers that burn going down. Chasers only wash away the jewel-toned disdain. The world ain't pretty and neither are you, he tells me each time I throw red flowers or green stems. He bleeds me dry and drains energy in bad daydream nightmares. He is my gift, my purgatory, my living hell. With him lies only misery, where optimists are idiots and gray is the only color of truth. With him lies the magic of vision beyond my being. I feed him in silence behind a toothy grin. And the world lies a smile that is nothing but bottled poison. Idiots. We are all idiots. And poem.
Oh, my God. Okay. First off, I love the ending. The world lies a smile that is nothing but bottled poison. Idiots. We are all idiots. I like your demon, my muse, my bravado, my demise. This is beautiful, and yes, you are a genius, and I will tell you again. Brilliant, right? Just FYI. There in the black and white, he stares at me, a cool reflection of smoky haze. In this bar, ain't no place for a lady. There's some really great lines in here. Where optimists are idiots, and gray is the only color of truth. So many people believe that gray is the only color of truth. One of my favorite sayings is, there isn't right and wrong, there is only opinion. And this kind of wraps that up quite nicely. Wow, you kind of wrapped that up. He spews this junky hangover nonsense in my hand and it flows fast, almost too fast to catch. Man, liars are very good like that. And we all know how you feel about liars. Wow, I really like this. I can't actually remember you reading this. And I didn't even write a comment on it, so I think this may be the first time I've ever heard this. So it may be old to you, but it's brand new to me. Great job on this. I will not steal every single line. So let me see. Sky, your thoughts real quick on this.
I don't know if I can give my thoughts quickly, but I'll try. I thought this was a wonderful piece, and it could be just because me, how I process things and how I internalize and my perspective on things, but it seems to me, anyway, it speaks of that internal kind of person, that internal voice that is within somebody. If you say, you know, I have but one demon, my muse, my bravado, my demise, the ego, the choke of horse. And then you go through all these things. So I ride his cocktails and do all these. But when you get into, like, the penultimate stanza here, you know, he feeds the jitters and burns, and then you go and you talk about, he bleeds me dry and drains my energy of bad dream and nightmares. He's a gift, my purgatory, my living hell. With him only lies misery, and where optimists and idiots, this is really, I really like, with optimists and idiots, and gray is the only color of truth, and how sometimes those thoughts that can be very detrimental to ourselves, that we kind of put our place on ourselves with expectations, and of course those things that we say, oh, well, no, this person's not telling the truth, and all those, I guess you would say, when you think of yourself, well, I can be an optimist, you know, that's stupid of me, because optimists are idiots, and you start to second guess yourself. It could not be that at all, but that is how I interpreted it, and I thought it was really cool how you kind of, I don't know if cool is the right word, but a very powerful write about how people can kind of have that duality in personality. Of course, not internally. There are others that are outside of us that also can do this kind of damage to us emotionally. So either way, I thought it was quite brilliant and really well done. And like I said, when you get down to the last two stanzas, that's when it really, I mean, the description before were brilliant, but I think that the meat in it and that I really, really enjoyed was in the last two stanzas where it kind of comes into that revelation. Really well done.
Thank you.
And AP, your thoughts?
Yeah, I love the demon at the start, the muse, the bravado, the ego, the choker horse, and I love the fact that they're restrained by alcohol and how it then goes into, I love grey, but I, and you know, the bitter jiggers that burn going down, but I've had a few of those. But I really love the ending as well. Sweet. I probably like the ending more than anything else because it reminds me of the Universe Song by Monty Python and the final line in that, which goes something like, and there better be intelligent life somewhere else because there's bugger all down here on Earth. End comment.
Yeah, pretty much.
And writing tour.
Oh, man. You know, the last thing I would ever think I would see you write was that, you know, truth was gray. But because, you know, black and white. But I love the idea of this, the setting of nefariousness being like a bar. It should almost be like the name of a bar because that's the nefarious thing gather almost. And you know, you talk about the drinks and the personification of your muse, and then you go and get it drunk. I mean, you know, it's brilliant in so many different ways. I really enjoyed it very, very much.
Thank you. I appreciate that. But yeah, that whole where optimists are idiots and gray is the only color of truth, that is the misery of said muse, where I tend to write to purge everything because I overthink the entire universe and it's crazy. But yeah, and that's, yeah, Bob, you guys are amazing. I really appreciate it. And I don't see your poem, AP. Can you put it up on the board for me?
Yeah, I only finished a little bit ago, pretty, but it's up on the board now. And I should say, this poem is not a one-trick pony, it's a two-trick pony. There's the stuff that's going on in the poem, and then there is something going on with the first word. Oh, sorry. The first word of the final line of each of the three stanzas. So nefarious, criminals, and the felonious. Yeah? So there's a little bit of something going on with that. So here we go now. And it goes a little bit like this. But never would we consider his behaviour fine, a farce of corruption, his actions clearly defined, inauspicious when brought together in twine, nefarious the word, when as wickedly fine. Crisis of morals when forbidden by law, imitates evils as we tally towards score, arsenals of lawyers and judges before, criminals have lived with that tag evermore. Features of villainy that lead to felony, long noted as being away from fidelity, notorious in understanding a melody, felonious, best describes this enemy. The crisis of death itself by injury, those within evil, I argue in certainty. Back at I add stress, leave you see, that this word matches almost to T. End poem.
You know, first of all, I'm loving the four-line rhyme scheme in this, and that's really hard to pull off without it sounding a little Dr. Seussy, and so as always elegant because you're just excellent that way. I absolutely love this. I love it when you tell us a little story. I love that. I love the word felonious because I'm a word person, and I've always loved that word because it's such a fancy-sounding word for something so not fancy. And so this is really amazing. Features of villainy that lead to felony, long noted as being away from fidelity, notorious in understanding, a melody felonious, best describes his enemy. And you can make a lying, cheating, whatever you want to call him. That sounds lovely. You know, it sounds like somebody you don't want. You just don't ever want to cross paths with. But he still sounds lovely in your poem, which is, you know, I am not good at that at all. Necrosis, the death of cells. Like, you know, I love the idea of things being necrotic and necrotic heart and like when it comes to people and emotions and ideas and things that aren't necessarily rotting flesh, but because it reeks of rotting flesh, it makes it even more gross and powerful. So you're just killing me today. I love this. I absolutely love this. And Rack and Score, what are your
thoughts? Now, before you go to Rack,
yes.
Pretty Bird, I want to explain the trick that's in this piece.
Yes.
Yeah. So the first word of the fourth line of each stanza. So let's take nefarious to start with. Yeah, it's a 900
uh-huh.
word. If we take the first two letters of the first word, N-E, if we take the first three letters of the second line word, farce, and we add that to the final four letters of the first word of the third line, inauspicious, we get nefarious. If we go to the next line, expansion, and we take CR out of crisis, IMI out of imitates, and we take NALS, the final four letters, out of arsenals, we get criminals. And we get exactly the same thing with felonious, FE for features, LON for long, IOUS, the final four letters of notorious, gives us felonious. Now, if we then put together nefarious, criminals, and felonious, we get necrosis if we do take out I, add an S, and leave out U, which is the third line of the final stanza.
Well, you just got all fancy with it, didn't you?
I did. I thought you'd like that, though. You're a wordy person.
I do. I absolutely love that. And I never would have noticed because now that you have mentioned that, now it's just right there and I can see it. So that's kind of awesome. See, I just love that. I love
I think it's
all those little things. What was that?
I said it's criminal.
Oh, my God.
Thank you.
But, you know, when you do all those little APisms, where whether you twist it this way or twist it that way or write a poem inside of a shape because, you know, you do that. It just tickles me. It absolutely tickles me. So, Rack and Tor, what are your thoughts on this clever piece?
It feels like an SAT test, you know, where you have to take the first two letters of one word, the next three, and just and pick the pattern out, because you could tell there's a pattern there, but it's like you said, you're going to be sitting there scratching your head for a while trying to figure out what it is, unless someone's like, you know, and then it's like, you know, oh, how did I miss that, you know? But yeah, and based on the subject matter too. You know, the idea of what is it, when you do an acrostic, everyone wants to make it into a an acronym. You know, you did, you know, the same thing. You didn't make this, you know, you made it into a actual word, so it didn't read like that at all. I mean, it was just so well crafted. You know, and you know, like Pretty Bird mentioned, it's not an easy thing to do. What was it, the last thing that you were saying, that, you know, you leave out you? Well, when you're talking about that, I guess we want to be left out of the, of that group.
That's what I thought.
Of the nefariousness?
Mm. Yeah.
And Sky, your thoughts?
I thought it was an excellent piece, and you clearly put a lot of work into it and a lot of thought into its creation, and and sometimes things like that, like even, you know, what's Rack's famous line, sometimes four lines take a lot more work than 60. And I think it's pretty cool that you did it this way. The story behind the crisis of the mortals were forbidden by law, imitates evil. It's very thoughtful and leaves the reader to chew on it long after they're done reading. Very well done.
Thank you, Scott.
We lost. So hopefully she will call back. And do you have a few more minutes to listen to another poem, AP, or do you have to run?
Yeah, we'll do one more poem, then I'll disappear off stage left. Pretty good.
Okay, so I've got Titus up on the board, and he has his sound out. So I can't wait to hear him. Give me one moment to get that up and running. And then find it, and I'll put it in here. La, 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 la. Here he is. And here we go.
There is nothing more inviting . It would appear, no matter how I've tried, fitting in would enable me to hide from anyone who makes up their minds to detest me for my very presence, find, although may that be their blindness, a mindless few who cannot show kindness. Why it was their hate for me would reveal something they cannot, and that is to feel. There are vibes I know, if being unliked for no apparent reason, having psyched out the devil for all I know, to ask why some bad person could more or less try not to hate another, reasons giving none. Nothing I can do, then nothing can be done. For the want of asking, passing by, although there's nothing more inviting than hello.
I do so enjoy the way Titus writes. It would appear, no matter how I've tried, fitting in would enable me to hide from anyone who makes up their mind to detest me for my very presence. You know what? I'm a people love me, people hate me kind of gal. There isn't a whole lot of middle ground. And I, you know, it is what it is. We're good. I don't need anybody who doesn't want to be here, so I'm not really upset at that. But it's an odd thing to go through life, and I'm sure it's happened to all of us, knowing that people kind of hate you and they don't even know you. You know, like they don't even give you a chance, and then you can be as nice as you can be, and they're just like, yeah, gotta go. And there's a gentleness in the way he writes, and you know, there are vibes I know if being unlike for no apparent reason, you know. And then at the end of this, he's still, you know, there's nothing more inviting than hello, where you're still the kind person you are. And, you know, haters are going to hate, basically. And it kind of sucks when you do nothing, you know. And this is just lovely, very, very eloquent, very elegant, and very just Titus, which is AP, what are your thoughts on it?
Well, look, Titus is a poet that, you know, has embraced rhythm and meter to a level that's well past me. And so he usually writes in iambic pentameter, and I think he has here, it's the da-da-da-da-da, the stressed, unstressed use of syllables. And he's either used 8 or 10 syllables per line, usually 10. I think he's used probably one line in each of those stanzas, so it's 8. And he's done that for flow deliberately. So there's a great elegance to the structure behind the writing, and that's why it flows so well. And that's why when he reads it and when you read it, it seems to have an elegance and a simplicity about the structure. And that the reason that's the case is because he's worked so hard to get it right and to get the words right and to use the words in the way he does. So classical English poetry, and there's nobody on the site that does it better than Titus.
Yes, if I said it once, I will say it 1,000 times. Me and iambic pentameter are not friends, and he just, it's like he speaks it every day. And while this isn't a standard Elizabethan 14 line with a volta thing, it's still iambic pentameter. And most people that write any kind of sonnet, whether it's blank verse, whether it's full, whatever, is very much line by line by line by line by line. And the way he writes, where it wraps through, and so you read it like you're actually performing Shakespeare. It's a magical thing, and he does it with such ease. It's the bane of my existence. So I'm not jealous. It's fine. And what are your
speaking of jealous,
on
right? Yeah, speaking of jealous. Oh man. You know, I always enjoy the way he writes. You know, and then there is that jealous factor that you mentioned. To me, you know, a lot of what he does, it feels like, you know, he was born in the wrong era or something. You know, he makes it seem so effortless. Like, you know, this is just the way people are supposed to talk, you know, don't question it. And it sounds so natural coming from him. And he does it in a way that he can tell a story. For me, this reminded me of those people in your life that kind of smile to your face, but, you know, want to stab you in the back. I don't know why it reminded me of that, but it's just, you know, that kind of a feeling of, you know, people that don't like you, but, you know, they kind of pretend that they do. And I don't know that that's really what he was trying to say, but that was kind of the feeling that I got. I just, you know, I love the way he writes. And, you know, I feel stupid commenting sometimes, so I'll let it end there.
We both. And Sky, your thoughts?
And this is an excellent piece. You know, sometimes there is no rhyme or reason. Some people are just are mean and are hateful, and to think about all these things and for judgmental sake. And sometimes it feels like no matter how much you try, like it says, you know, appear no matter how I've tried fitting in, being able to hide from anyone who makes up their mind. And sometimes that's just it. And for people that tend to really want to please others, it's just very difficult when it comes to people like that. And sometimes you just, it's really hard to walk away. And this is a really cool write about, I feel like, you know, that is very prevalent in many people's lives. You can't please them all. Excellently done. And I do think, like at the end where he says, kindness does go a long way. Really well done.
There's something to be said just for the mindset that if you have all these people hating on you and you can still smile through it and go on being who you are without that changing you, it really speaks to the caliber of person. Because so many will either bite back or they will cower, or they will change who they are in that scenario to try to be well-liked. So it does feel like, well, I've done what I can, apparently this is the way it's going to be. Let me just smile at the next one, and hopefully I'll fare better. And, you know, it's nice to have that strength of person. And, Guy, I put you up on the board if you're ready to read. Are you headed off?
I was going to be back left, but thank you again, Pretty Bird, and we'll talk very soon.
Yes, sir. Good night. Good night, or good day.
Thank you.
Good day.
All right, so I figured out how
the show is yours.
Oh, thank you.
Okay.
I figured out how this is going to fit. This is what happens to the soul when it lives in the nefarious world. How's that? That's a good time. And you're really going to have to reach deep, because this is really heavy in metaphor. It's not really about dead swans. All right, here we go. There are dead swans that dance with Wraith beneath the wheel of time. By Sky Darkholm. There's a darkened wheel that spins. It spins and spins and spins, like rotating gravity that molders, clinging to spoked teeth and rotting seats, that sickly kind of rotting that lurches and keels, wallowing in drafts that pluck themselves along each board, splintering and splintering and splintering, till nails give way, till they peel upward and descend and descend and descend, down into a coffin of mud, a debris of carnival rot, where swan boats dance, a visit like Vivian's apparitions, an aged and lackluster dance, listless in its discipline, and there in the foul fecal of squalor and black-rimmed turbid, I can still look up, see those dead swans, those darkly pinned spokes that cling like teeth, spinning and spinning and spinning, slowly pitching downward all that clings and severs, pieces once whole gathering, downward and downward and downward into the darksome reflection of its sky and home.
I do so enjoy your spoken word pieces. How lovely is this? I'm all excited. This is fabulous. Yeah, I love this real time, this underworld of weight and muck that you're looking through, that you're looking up through to see better things that aren't there, because everything is piling up through the rotting depths. I am loving this. I'm loving that the sickly kind of rocking that lurches and keels, and you read that so vividly and so perfectly. I absolutely love this. This needs to be a full performance piece. You need a SoundCloud. I'm just putting that out there. It's fabulous, fabulous, fabulous in its dark, dank, rotted depth of the weight of the world. It is amazing. And, you know, here's the thing. Like rotating gravity that molders, clinging to silk teeth and rocking teeth, you know, you can't stop it. You see it coming. There's nothing you can do. You can't do anything but grin and bear it. You can't climb out from under it, because even the air is holding you down, and that is just wonderfully vivid, wonderfully visceral, wonderfully emotional, and I am fitting. So there is that, and back and forth, your time.
There was a weight to it. I mean, the read was kind of unexpected, because I've never heard you do a piece like that before. But I loved the meter of it. It was just, you know, like Pretty Bird said, the spoken word. Wow, the repeating lines just hammered it for me. But there was a weight to it, I felt, you know, almost like you were clawing your way out of a grave or something. It was just very powerful and emotional. I really appreciated it.
Thank you, Rick.
Now, I know you just read, but could you read Kay for me?
Yeah. And then I am going to have to head out. I need to go to bed tonight before 12. I love you guys.
All right, bye. I shall let you go, and I shall... I will not guilt you into saying it's fine.
Do not
I
go
know.
Gentlemen.
I am. I really need to get some sleep. Irreplaceable Embry by Kay. Authorization of Noise. Shake hands with the devil. Roses of today plant seeds of comfort, warming our tomorrow through sunshine to shade. End quote.
You know, I kind of love the entire idea of this when it's on a backdrop of nefariousness. You know, authorization of noise shakes hands with the devil. That could be anything from the traffic that's not letting you sleep to all the chitter-chatter, rumor, nonsense, gossip that it just carries itself everywhere that you get little bits and pieces of, and it's none of it feels good. And then the roses of today with the warming of our tomorrows, it's all in this too shall pass. And if you find yourself in the grip of those criminal-minded, wicked-hearted people that find some kind of twisted pleasure out of others' humiliation or pain or other gains that they get for whatever reason, it'll pass. And there are brighter things. And there is sunshine with the next morning. And I love the idea of that. I love so much about this, even the picture that she chose with the dried flowers that, you know, are dead flowers, but they're still quite beautiful. And hidden inside those buds are seeds that will make a garden. And how perfect is it? And raconteur, your thoughts?
Yeah, I love the idea of shaking hands with the devil. That's a really great phrase in terms of being nefarious. It just conjures up all the right images, I think. But you know, there's still the sense of hope in this that kind of speaks to the person that's in the midst of this. You know, it gives a sense of them, you know, not just their will, but you know, their mindset and their ability to kind of, I won't really say see through it, but struggle and survive regardless of what's getting thrown at them. I really liked it.
Lovely. And you bet it. So, Sky, what are your thoughts?
I do think it has that duality to it. I like it because the first two lines are, you know, speaking of so that's how people or things, situations can be spiteful, hateful, hard. And, of course, you know, when it's false when they speak. And then the end two lines, speaking of, I shut down my computer now. I have to bring it up on my phone for a second. Speaking how of, like, how kindness will prevail. And I think that was kind of what, let's see, here we go. Oh, no, here we go. I wanted to quote it exactly. Plant seeds of comfort. So roses of today plant seeds of comfort. So to me, those two lines are speaking of that idea of being nefarious or, you know, certain things in your life being nefarious. And then, of course, how good planting good seeds, planting those beautiful roses will eventually, those things will bloom and you reap what you sow, basically. So really well done.
Absolutely. There's a lot in that brevity, isn't there? And people are split on the idea of brevity. When a brevity is done well, it can kick you in the gut. It can rip you open. It can change your perception of something or your perspective on something. And it may not tell a whole story. It may not have all the details. It may not take you for a full ride, but boy, will it linger. And so I have a whole love-hate relationship, because sometimes brevities seem incomplete and sometimes they are everything. And this one is quite complete. And I am so glad that she drafted. And on the board, we have Frank, who has a SoundCloud. And since tonight's theme is nefarious, I'm wondering if he's going to have that evil laugh. And so who wants to place their bets? Yes, no, yes. I think he's going to laugh.
Yeah, I'll go $50. Yes.
Who wants to what?
To see whether or not at the end of Frank's SoundCloud, because it's evil, like the theme is nefarious, whether or not he's going to have that evil laugh.
Yeah.
Oh, he always has a laugh.
So last time he played, I
win now. When was it recorded? When was it written?
It was written a week and a half ago.
Yeah, we've got a laugh. I'll take my money now.
Well, seeing that we're all on the same side of this. And here we go.
I'll send you points, Sky.
In the attic it began, with an eerie sound that rattled a poor little girl, and a known demonic force that controlled her soul and mind completely, making her look bizarre and causing her to levitate and speak in tongues. There was nothing that could save her, except an exorcism. Two desperate priests were summoned to perform the religious act, after the shrinks had failed to see the devious shadow in her. Fever had triggered sudden convulsions and rapid heartbeats. They were not mere nightmares nor psychedelic dreams conjured. The poor little girl was possessed by Pazuzu, an ancient demon from the ancient mysteries, a Babylonian secret, awakened from the ravenous depth of the chasm of hell. A dreadful and sinister servant of the legend of Lucifer. Beware of the looming nocturnal shadow of the fiend, for he will lurk in the darkness of your racking mind, to torment and haunt you with an implacable insanity, in a powerful hunger to devour you like a doomed prey. Lust is the one sin that it makes you succumb to temptation. Terror is the merciless vengeance of his unholy perversion. Look into his eyes. You will see Pazuzu, not Captain Howdy.
There's a whole other minute of that, but the poem itself is over, and that was very hard to hear. So I'm sorry, Frank, that we didn't get to the end of the dialogue, but the entire poem is there, and I love how theatrical he is. I mean, he just wants. It's almost like he's like the demon's. What is Dracula's little human-ish sidekick? Who?
Nosferatu?
No. He's got, you know, the Renfield. Okay. It's almost like he's on this side, just telling all the secrets of that side, and so I love the theatrics of it. I love the music that they had behind there. I wish you would have spoken just a wee bit louder because it was just a little bit distracting.
Michael,
but oh my goodness!
That's Michael Field's Tubular Bells with Exorcist.
Oh, I appreciate that. But as an excellent piece of music. But I love how the shrinks tried to help her, but they could not see that she was possessed. I love that this is a lusty demon because I am who I am. And, you know, lust is the one sin that he makes you succumb to temptation. Terror is the merciless vengeance of his unholy perversion. I'm like, oh my. So that's just, you're possessed and now you're lusty. And there's something about that that I absolutely love. And not just because, you know, lust is my favorite sin, but because of all the things to be taken from you, the ability to control your physical desires that you need to sexually devour others in ways you would never do on your own, you have no control over that, scares the crap out of me. Because there's a certain lack of control, generally speaking, that I do not fare well with. I like a certain semblance of control, even though I understand that any actual control over things is kind of a phantom. But to be possessed in such a way where you can't say no, where you're doing things that are just entirely unseemly and ungainly and embarrassing and humiliating, and you want it because you're possessed to want it, that is that freaks me out. So excellent job with that, Frank. And Guy, your thoughts?
Yes, so I do want to put a disclaimer out that I have shut down all electronics, so all of my comments will not be looking at a poem. So please forgive me if they're not as detailed or quoting as much as they usually are. And public service announcement. The poem was great. I heard it the other day on the Exorcist show, and there is a last at the end, so I win. I'm just kidding. We all win. And no, I thought it was really cool. I liked how he delved into the character. I still to this day have not seen The Exorcist. I don't think I ever will. I don't think I ever want to sit through the film. I like dark films, but I think I'm good with that one. But I do know a lot about the film, obviously, because it's like a cult classic and there's lots of this everywhere. There's no one that doesn't even, if you've ever seen it, you still know what it's about. You've still seen those clips of the head spinning and spewing and the concept of it. And I think you grasp that well. You can't escape that, but And I know the amount of profanities that run out of that child's mouth, but it's a voiceover. I understand that. capturing that and the idea of that and his piece, I thought towards the end, especially when the section about when he starts leaping from the temptation and on, really delves into that character description. And I think I like how he uses the word temptation, because sometimes, you know, not to that extreme, obviously, of that film and to that cult fandom, but it is very tempting to want to give, to sometimes to just be, you know, to take, to be angry at somebody rather than just kind of step back and say, okay, you know, what, or even if you're bitter or vindictive, you know, sometimes you hurt me, I'm going to hurt you. And sometimes it's really hard and it's very tempting. So I like that he uses that word, because sometimes you just got to think it out and breathe it out. And it was a wonderful fandom write for The Exorcist. So well done. And for the word nefarious, which is, you know, that's a good word for that film.
And Rex. Yes. And Rack and Store, your thoughts?
Yeah. I enjoyed it very much. I should have realized that it was actually supposed to be a tribute to The Exorcist. Yeah, he's got little cues in it and everything. I thought it was fantastic. The idea of he took about enough stuff. The idea that he stuff with biggest attraction, the idea of abandonment.
You're breaking up a little bit on my end.
Yeah, me too. I think I heard abandonment.
You said, Rack?
I was just mentioning the idea of, you know, when you're talking about lust, the idea of the of abandon involved sometimes on you know, the other side, you know, the giving in of and tearing down your barriers and giving in to the emotion. So all encompassing to me. I thought it was a wonderful piece.
Yeah. There's a massive difference between that wonderful release of lots of inhibitions and then being forced to do things you can't stop, and which is frightful. And so that was excellent. That was in there. I saw The Exorcist young, and that was unfortunate for me. But I actually got more freaked out when I watched The Amityville Horror. My mom's like, I used to drive past that house all the time. I'm just like, oh, please help me. And
that movie really scares me. It's the basement. It's the basement and the faces. I'm petrified of that film. Oh, my God. I won't watch it alone.
It's terrible. It's something. Let me tell you what. So yeah, there is one movie about possession that is plays like a documentary, and I don't remember what it was. I don't want to remember what it was. I might try to for you, just so that you know not to watch it, because it plays as a documentary, and it's one of those where the demon goes from this body to that body to this body to that body, so they clear her and it goes into somebody else, but it doesn't manifest itself until they're out of that situation. And they're like breaking their backs backwards and doing all kinds of stuff. But it plays all like a full documentary. And it's wonderfully believable. And they do an excellent job. I'm just like, I'm never going to sane, I promise. Because that's where it took place. So, yeah.
I don't want to not watch Exorcist because I think it would scare me. I'm just not interested in watching it. All the profanities. And not that I hate swearing, but... I don't think it's just not. I'm just not interested in seeing it. people are like, you need to watch it at least once because you know you've seen a lot of things. I'm like, no, I'm all right. But it's going to scare me. But Candyman scares me. Candyman genuinely. I have to cover. Yeah, it really scares me. I won't even say it in the mirror. Like I'm super. I have to cover mirrors after watching that. I don't. Like that, it just freaks me out. I don't know why. It just, I think maybe because I watched it when I was young and it's always freaked me out, but it just freaks me out.
How are you with Bloody Mary?
I never seen a film about that, but I want to do that in the mirror.
Ah.
Not because I'm not being superstitious. I'm just like, why rock a boat? You know,
why put that temptation out there? I think the freakiest movie I ever saw was The Serpent and the Rainbow, simply because I know that I don't know all the different things, all the different powers that be, all the different religions and whatever with this and the that and whatever old tribal whatever. Where they thought that where he looked dead and they buried him and he wasn't dead, he could feel everything, could hear everything, could be whatever. I'm like, I don't need to know that that's ever a possibility. I don't care if it's not. I don't need to know that it might be because talk about, I mean, I'm not, but I think I might be in that scenario. And it's not okay if somebody's going to like put you through an autopsy and you're not actually dead. That's not okay.
Yeah.
So I have very specific oddities that freak me the F out. And
well, what about you said you watched it? You watched something really young, The Exorcist, very young. A movie that I was really afraid of because I watched it too young, and then I watched it in my early 20s because I said, and I never watched it again. I watched it when I was little, and it petrified me. My mom had to get, she had these porcelain ceramic heads that were a lot of, she had to get them out of the house. But I watched it once when I was young, and then I watched it again when I was 20, because everybody's like, that's a comedy. And I'm like, no, it's not. It really scarred me. It was Killer Clowns from Outer Space. And it's still to this day, I still to this day, you know, and then I watched it in my early 20s. I'm like, oh, it is a comedy. But I watched it so young when they were, like, sucking the blood out of the meat pack. It was, I was done. It was over. That was it. I hated clowns. That was all it took. Hello?
It's funny because I get more mentally freaked out by things like Soylent Green because, you know, Soylent Green are people. And that, you know, when you don't see that coming, it's not the most exciting movie. And it's an old, old movie. And
what
so
movie?
You're sitting there and Soylent Green.
Well, I don't know what that is. Go ahead.
All right. Well, here's the gist. So it is modern day dystopia back in the 60s or whatever the heck that movie was made. And so when you get old, you go to this farm or whatever, this happy place. This is where you go. You finally reach whatever the heck. And so one day this guy's dad dies and he goes to follow him in the truck of all the old people that are or is dying, is old of age, and they take him off to said farm and or whatever they call it. And it turns out that that's a packing plant for their food source. So they turn them into the protein bars that they've been feeding people for decades. So that
yeah, was I don't know.
And back to poetry, because I will get lost in the land of old freaky movies. We have R.S. Morris on the board, and he has a SoundCloud, and this is Paper Gangster, and it's like this. Well, not like this yet, because my thing is taking forever to open, so give me 1 second. And it is, there he is.
No respect for paper gangster. Never be exposed, they thought. Can't handle pretenders. Living a fake life, they bought. Lawyer watching Sons of Anarchy. Tracksuit with sandals, looking fat. Uber delivers him to a Harley shop. Wearing golf pants and fedora hat. He pops down the gold card for the latest Heritage Classic. Then next door for biker duds, chaps, and black leather jacket. The look not yet complete, fake tail and studded earrings. Must have a wallet on a chain, black boots, do-rags, biker things. He admires himself in the mirror, his real look put on the shelf. Needs some place to ride, show off his new big bad self. Chick magnet, envy of men, first stop, Buster and Days. Once a screen is added to shield wind, a real biker craze. He's never ridden a bike on a winding highway at night. Never felt rain hitting his face like small bullets blocking your sight. Never set points with a matchbook. Never kick-started or jockey shifted. He thinks you just press and go, a fake hombre who pretends he's gifted. He is king of the road, a big bad biker dude. All his courtroom adversaries know they're over and screwed. Bad biker barely misses the bumper after the car in front stops hard, breaks into a sweat, gets the shakes, a small mishap, now forever scarred. He pushes the bike to a stop and go, never known such anguish and fear. Already done with the biker life, never even got out of third gear. Can't handle pretenders, something someone is not. No respect for a paper gangster. Back in your Range Rover, big shot.
I love that. That just screams to me of Wild Hog, and that just cracks me up. I love how he chose a nice kind of blue background for this. You know, there's something about fake people, all these wannabes, all of these. Yeah, I mean, he never even got out of the third gear. He bought all his stuff that day. He had to stop short one time, and now he can't even get back on the bike. And I love that, you know, how he portrays the poser in such detail, but with such a gentle voice, where he's not like he's an idiot. He's all like, yeah, just get back in your Range Rover there, buddy. This is wonderful storytelling as usual, Mr. Morris, and with that voice that just kind of lulls you. So I, yeah, no respect for a paper gang. You know, I've never actually heard that term, and that is just fabulous. You know, I love how he chides them down here where it says, where is it? I will find it. He never set points at the matchbook, never kickstarted or jockey shifted, thinks he just press and go like it's, you know, that easy to ride a Harley. Absolutely love this. Love it, love it, love it. And excellent storytelling. Subscribe. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought it was excellent. I also loved the storytelling. I love the mood that he set with the music, but also with his voice. And I thought the Paper Gangsters was really clever, too. And I like how he describes such detail about how he's getting ready to go, all the things, the chain with the wallet. And, of course, and then he goes to talk about ego and about how he thinks he's just going to hop on and be perfect and wonderful and how people, I guess, take advantage take for granted certain things, and they're like, oh yeah, I'm just gonna be fine. I'll just join on and do it, and then one little scare, and he's already done. Very cleverly done, very well done. Enjoyed that one.
And Rack and Four.
Yeah, I really appreciated this. It had that Mickey Spillane type feel to it, you know, old time gangster, paper gangster. The music was a great fit, and the story was excellent.
Absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. You know, it's funny because there's a certain amount of arrogance that is downplayed, but it just kind of has that undercurrent. There's a certain amount of arrogance for somebody who pushes paper all day to here's a wad of cash for a bike. Here's some leather gear. Now I am the badass that I always wanted to be, and he can't even get down the street. And it's almost like it's those naughty kids in school that won't take shop because shop is for the morons, but they don't know how to handle a drill press themselves, you know? And so it's that kind of arrogance that they think there is, you know, if they can do it, I can do it. I've always hated that mentality across the board on all things because just because somebody can do it doesn't mean that it's easy. It doesn't mean you can't do it, but it doesn't mean that it's as easy as it looks. And so I like the subtlety in this, where he doesn't generally call people idiots, where I, on the other hand, call everybody idiots, apparently. And so there's something to be said about that. And, Guy, I want to keep you here with us because I will talk to you all night long, but it's 11:30. Are you sure you don't have to go?
I'm already in bed. I'm sleeping. I'm going to fall asleep on you guys. I'm just listening. That's why I said I shut everything down. So if I start snoring, put me on mute. Because I'm not even muting myself. So if you start to hear weird sounds, just mute myself. I'm muting myself.
Tell her.
Not myself.
You're not supposed
to
tell
snoring.
Put you on mute. That's funny.
Well, yeah, because usually I mute myself.
There is
myself,
a massive
but
loud
I can't mute myself.
That unless they had Miss Beverly.
Hello.
Hello. Hello.
Hello, hello.
So I have Mr. Shark on. I'm assuming it's, I don't know why. I haven't read him yet, so I'm calling him a him, but I don't even know. We'll find out if S. Sharp is a gentleman or a lady as soon as we hear the sound file, but I have them up on the board, and I'm all excited. because I don't know that I've ever heard them before. So I always love new things. I'm like all excited about it. Are you guys ready?
Ready.
Humanity shades darkness. The cold breath of humanity bristles the fine hair upon one's neck as the calculus turns in the gray light to serve injustice as a last meal of sanity, of light, where the only consistency is humanity's shadow. One dark event shades the next. Christ nailed upon the cross, sacrifices for forgiveness. The Crusades deliver heretics their due. Intolerance wrapped as justice, one man better than the next. I bring you the Black Death, witch hunts, persecution of Jews chopped to pieces to cure the plague. Forced servitude across the globe builds the next future. Salem, witch trials, in the name of religion, kill them all. Trail of tears, obstacles of advancement moved. World wars, the Holocaust, the great Chinese famine, the Holodomor, Roman Catholic sex abuse, Khmer Rouge torture and murder of millions, Rwanda, Chechnya, Bosnia, darkness shades darkness.
Well, that was like a reflection of all the world's evils all in one place, isn't it? That's a very powerful piece, and aptly named the Humanity Shades Darkness. Because, you know, when you're talking about nefariousness, people who do bad things for no other reason than they can, or for their own gain with no, you know, give a darn about anything or anyone else, there isn't a single topic that he touched on that isn't absolutely wicked and nefarious. And in that respect, it's perfectly fitting. It is. There are a lot of points in there that we're not delving into. However, it is a serious reflection of the dark side of humanity. And I thought that in that, it was vivid and it was visceral and it was a very powerful piece. So, Sky, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that there are certain words, certain phrases, certain moments, certain events in history and reflection that immediately bring you down to your gut, you know, like a punch. If there are certain things you say to anybody, it's universal. You'll say one thing and then all of a sudden their emotions change, their mood change, because in one phrase, one word, two words, there's a wealth of history behind it and sadness. And I think that he, you know, achieved that very well by naming many, many different things throughout history that definitely were evil acts. I really enjoyed the ending. I thought that was a really good way to cliff off the way that did he say darkness shapes darkness or shades?
Shades.
Oh, shame?
No,
oh, okay.
Shades,
okay.
Like in shadow shapes.
Yeah. I just wanted to make sure I heard that right. I thought the way that he echoes it out and it makes me think of how it doesn't end. We need to learn. We need to remind ourselves to learn from that. Otherwise, we're just going to be that fading and fading and fading. Keep going and going and going. Really well done.
Thank you for that. And back and forth. Great talk.
Yeah, it was. I enjoyed it. There's hardly much more that I could say. It was just, you know, well read, presented.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, it's not easy to. I mean, it would be easy to ramble off and get a whole big whatever, but the whole feel of that piece, I'm still just every bullet point of, oh, yeah, that was bad. No, yeah, that was worse. No, yeah, that was horrible. And it lingers that way. What do you think, Deb?
Yeah, I agree. I think it was really awesome to hear his voice and to hear him read it. And I think that he sadly covered so many truths that, you know, I mean, they hit hard, but then the sobering thought that it's just a little chunk of a list compared to some of the stuff, and that's pretty sobering itself. I think everyone mentioned that he covered, I mean, we're talking from witches to wars and the Trail of Tears. I mean, there's a lot of history packed into the poem.
I think
absolutely
that is the
nefarious
truth of it. Yeah, the truth of it is what's scary. The truth of it is what weighs. It's not that, you know, a lot of our poems are all metaphor and our creative mind working to weave things into something, and this is just truth after truth, fact after fact after fact after fact, or subject after subject after subject, and it's a lot. It weighs a lot. There's a lot of evil in that list, so excellently done. And Deb, I have you on the board if you're ready to read.
I can do that. Make it back over there.
Hello?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I was reading to my mute button. I think I maybe should start over. Okay. It's called 'Neath the Wicked Woman's Nefarious Mask. Here we go again. Can you hear me?
Yes.
What?
Okay, cool. If lips flap, then those lips weave webs of lies. And those lies spread around like hot venom, breathing fiery flames like the mythic dragon. As her slanted slaughterhouse grin grows big, she-devil flaps her forked tongue, flinging fury with the wallop of razor-sharp battle-axe blades. But the plastic smile plastered on her mouth is just painted on in crimson beeswax lipstick. So under the coats of color, Lady Shrew snarls. And Paul.
You know, you have pretty much described my favorite people on the planet, the ones that everything has an agenda, the ones that if they're saying something to one person and they're perfectly believable because they believe their own BS, and then they're saying the opposite to somebody else, or then they're saying something different to the next person to see what they can learn so that they can use that to be more lies to other people. And that is just, like, first of all, why? Well, who has time for that master? I don't understand how they build a personality on so much nonsense. But yeah, when you can't trust a single thing that comes at you behind that sugar sweetened smile, it makes you wary of anybody who comes at you with a smile, because you've seen that smile in somebody who was quite nefarious, who was evil and wicked-minded, that it makes the innocent seem tainted. And that's a sad thing, but that's what happened. Which I'm telling you, you know, you have these beautiful descriptions, and I feel bad for the mythic dragon, which is glorious and regal, to be describing these fiery lies, you know. That's so not good. But it's lovely. And again, it's a brevity that has so much in there. It's so descriptive. And it's not just vibrant in imagery. I mean, it is. I mean, you start if lips flap and those lips leave webs of lies, and you're like, oh, I know these people. I know too many of these people, you know? And it's like they change your distance, you know. It's like now your aura is a little dirty for having crossed their path. And I found that just fabulous, the way you weave all of that in there. And so excellent. Rack and Tor, what do you think?
Thanks, pretty much.
These flapping lips. Oh, you are very welcome.
Kristen, you know she's lying if her lips are moving. That's the thought that came to mind. That and the other thing that you kind of touched on too. You know, that's the kind of person, you know, when they're not around anymore, you feel like you need a shower. It's one of those things where you, I don't know. It brings out a lot of emotion, and you know, it's the beautiful imagery of it that does it. You know, the mythic dragon and the shrew. It's wonderfully diametrically opposed. So that those two ideas, those two images, but, you know, at the same time, they conjure up, you know, a very powerful image. Wonderfully done, Deb.
Thank you, Rack. Appreciate that.
And Miss Sky, what are your thoughts?
I thought it was an excellent piece, and I think that speaking of those who have double speak and ulterior motives and are just evil. See, I have this weird relationship with people like that, because I always think I'm a really good judge of character. You know, I'm always like, yeah, I'm a really great, and it's something I truly believe. And then I always find out, you know, mostly some people are like, no, they're really not good, and then. They aren't all these truths start to uncover, and I think it's because I always want to see the best in people, and I always look at good qualities, and I'm like, no, they couldn't mean things like that, and then they do, and it's very disheartening. I feel it's very, very disheartening, because then it's kind of like you're blindsided, and then you start to connect all those past things. Oh, that makes sense, but you see it in a different perspective because they've been revealed. And that happens quite often to me. Even though I deem myself a good sense of character, I don't think I am. I think I just want to see good things too much that by the end when I start to, you know, usually it's somebody pointing it out, no, look at this, and then I realize, and then I'm like, oh, yeah, you're right. And it sucks. And so these people that you speak of, these double speak, I mean, these dragons and weak, they create a lot of damage. Really well done, Deb. And you're going to have to send that to me because I'm offline.
You know,
in my mailbox.
I have.
Hello. And thank you. Great comment, everybody. Okay. And, yeah, you know, there's a double-edged sword with those people because first you get blindsided and knocked on your ass, and then in second part you start second guessing and you thought you were, you guys already said this, but you thought you were a pretty damn good judge of character, and then you find out you're wrong, and then you do silly stuff like starting clean slates multiple times and still, you know, what's that definition of insanity? Doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different outcome. And I hate when people prove that one. But anyway, different show.
You know, it's funny because I've all. What was that, Rack?
You said doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. And I said, you could say that again.
Right? And there's, well, first of all, there's something to be said for a poem that sparks a conversation because I always just love that. Second, I've never understood, like, it's always perplexed me how these people, these just wicked-hearted people that give no crap about anybody but their own nonsense, can walk around like they're, and pardon my French, like their shit does not stink, And the ones who were stupid enough to trust them, we're stuck second-guessing everything, not able to trust ourselves as fully because we made such an egregious mistake that the next people that come around that are innocent, we then judge them so harshly before we trust them, before we're able to trust them. And I think that is a horrible aftermath that they leave. And they don't care. They don't notice. It doesn't matter to them, even if they did know, because they're just so full of everything about themselves all the time. And
yep.
Yeah, so.
Absolutely.
And it's horrible because you know, how did they get to lie and then everybody else gets to feel like crap? Like, that's like backwards to me. You know, I would chalk that up to it because we're better people, you know, because we actually have feelings, you know.
Yeah, right. But, and then you wind up feeling like such a dumbass for, again, I say for the multiple times you thought, okay, well, they know I'm onto them now. They won't try this crap on me again. And they do. And it's like you look in the mirror and it does it say schmuck up there? Because I think it does sometimes.
Do you know where that phrase came from, you know, blowing smoke up that region?
Oh, I thought you were going to say schmuck. I was going to say, I don't know if I should say on a PG-13 show, but I feel like I did know, but nothing's...
Well, it's real quick.
Diagnostic procedure, right?
When people back in the whatever hundreds of years ago had breathing problems, they would literally have people blowing cigarette smoke into like the bellows that were like an enema to help them breathe better. So now the whole entire term of blowing smoke up your butt is because they ain't connected that way. It does nothing. You know? But it was an actual medical treatment for respiratory distress.
It's a diagnostic treatment. That was
Well, as a person who has asthma, I can say thank you to the first person who decided that wasn't the best way to treat a breathing issue. Dear Lord.
You think? Yes. You know, right? But they literally would have people. It was men, a bunch of men in a room, just blowing into the thing and then like literally pumping it by hand into where it was aimed. That it was, you know, and they called themselves doctors. Thank goodness. You know, it makes me wonder what we're going to think of today's treatment 200 years from now.
Yeah, but I can't help but think of the joy of my inhaler right now versus the bellows.
Exactly. So before we get to Rack's poem that I chose to close with because he's fabulous, what's coming up later on in this week? I know that tomorrow is Open Poetry with Sweet and May the 4th be with you. So it's going to be fabulous. And so what's coming up after that?
Well, it would appear that quite a few people are having appointments to find out when upcoming surgeries are. So the schedule's a little bit out of whack at the moment. I'm not even positive about Friday. So you know what? I'm just going to say let's all get excited about the fact that Sweet's first show on her new night is tomorrow. Because beyond that...
On hump day.
Yeah, right. So, you know, keep an eye on the board, and I'll let people know if things change. But in the meantime, I'm excited for my Sweet, for her new show.
Absolutely. And I know that on Sunday for the 18 and overs, we have our sister site, which is the Adult Lounge, and it's Mother's Day, so it's all about the hot mamas. So if you are of age and interested, go check that out. And, Sky, do you have anything coming up this weekend?
Mm-hmm. And then on Monday, Monday's personal prompt is the 7 wonders of the world. There's some amazing photos and stuff there.
I have to check that out.
And then all of a sudden I'm excited about next Monday, the 16th, because people are buzzing about the clown. So those are my next 2 Mondays. Send in the clown. Monkey is singing the song Send In the Clowns as the intro.
I love that song. That is awesome.
Yeah, Sweet was saying
the
it's one of her
The story behind that song.
Too. He did it in the Frank Sinatra version. So that'll be the intro on the 16th. Anyway, so there's two of mine to get. And I guess somewhere in there we'll have Sky, like, next week. Maybe she can talk about hers.
Don't leave yet because I'm not online. So don't leave yet. So this Saturday I'm on Poetic Slice, and it is May. So every week is going to be Star Wars because I'm still on my Star Wars journey. So if you call into any Saturday night this month, you will get Star Wars. You could write, we're doing Clone Wars 5 and 6. There's characters you can write to, quotes, and all that good stuff that I usually do. And that's at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The melatonin is kicking in, guys. And next Tuesday, Deb, can you help me? Because I forget what I said. Isn't that like an octopus one or something?
Yes, I have them all at the same time.
You
have the peacock mantis shrimp. You have the Dumbo octopus. And you have the Yeti crab. And they're all really cool.
That's the one, yeah. So 8 p.m. next Tuesday. And don't forget, you could write fiction. So if you want to take the term Yeti crab and go completely fiction and like this some kind of crazy creature, you can. You can mix fiction with fact. You can brew a fiction and then put a little fact in the author's note. Or you can do what Deb does and give me like this really cool thing I can bring to school and perhaps teach children through poetry about things. Which is always really cool. Yeah, it's really cool. I like it. It's going to be fun. Give me some poems. And come out
Excellent.
And talk about topics, yeah.
Cetaceans and cephalopods. Sounds like amazing.
Sweet Pea calls it the Sky Home Study Program.
Yep.
There you go.
Doing that homework. All that homework
she is. That's awesome. That is fabulous. And now it is time for our last poem of the evening. It is Mr. Rackenfor, and he's probably going to make me cry, but, you know, because he tends to do that. So he is up on the board, and he has
a sound. Is it the Hurt Locker?
Probably. Let me go look. I'm just opening it up now. And, yes, it is. So enjoy that.
I guess by Rackenfor. So, I crushed your dreams and tore out your heart, pulled back the curtain, revealed what you suspected from the start. People see what they want to see. I'm just an illusion, merely a wannabe. All I've done, a lie or a joke. No emotion or truth in anything I spoke. You talk of winning as if it were a game, watching as I drown in tears used to douse the flame. You say you want to be alone, betrayed by all you've been shown. I guess it's my chance to do something right, grant your wish and stay out of your sight. I guess I'm the fool for thinking I could ease your strife. Delusions of adequacy, condemned to the shadows of your life. End poem.
Delusions of adequacy. I absolutely find that statement to be brilliant. Because it's not delusions of grandeur. You know, it's not that you think, you know, you're bigger than you are, you're more important than you are. It's not like you've gotten inflated anything. You are delusional to think you were good enough. And that breaks my heart, but it's brilliantly phrased. And, you know, if somebody, I'm sure people read this and it's all snotty. Well, so I crush your dreams and tore out your heart like you're an asshat. But it's not. It's this whole, everything I've done, you think it's a lie. You think that everything that I felt for you, everything I've done for you, everything that I have put in place to try to care for you is false. And so, you know, now what am I? I'm the idiot for believing that there was truth in a heart. And it's heartbreaking. It is absolutely heartbreaking. But I guess I'm the fool, you know, for thinking that, you know, I was a thing for a minute. My bad. And it's a little lightly written with that kind of twist in voice, but it definitely weighs heavy. But man, illusions of adequacy. You know, again, this is like the undercurrent of most of my existence, where you said you're made to feel, for all the best that you give somebody, you're made to feel like it's not big enough, like it's nothing, like it doesn't matter. And you know what? Those people suck. They just suck. I mean, who does that? Who, you know, I tend to be very logically minded. I mean, I'm a 50-50 split on all my personality tests from whenever between logic and passion, heart and mind. It's a tough place to be. But even with all of the logic of things and all of the passion of things, I don't have it in me to hurt somebody on purpose. Do I hurt people? I'm human. It happens. You know, my bad. I'm an idiot. But I have never set out to hurt anybody. So these people that can look somebody in the face and feel like you're, all that you've given them in truth is a falsehood, and then just be like, oh, I can't even stand the sight of you, and walk away. I mean, they're kind of like, you know, little mini monsters. Because that's just coolness. There's just insensitivity. I mean, how do you care about somebody that you can talk to that way or make them feel that way or say these things? You know, on the flip side of that, if you guys are having a deep discussion and you're giving analogies, that's separate and different. Because you can say it seems as though, and in a grander perspective, be there. But generally speaking, that's just me. People are just cold. So, Ms. Beverly, what are your thoughts on this piece of the hurt line?
Well, you know, I remember this one because it was like so powerfully emotional that I put one of those, you know, little worthy emojis where the smiley face is just bowing down to it, because like it just grabs, like we this one, oh, where the people see what they want to see. I'm just an illusion, merely a wannabe. But that is just gut-wrenchingly sad. All I've done, a lie or a joke, no emotion or truth in anything I spoke, it's just, it hits hard. And it makes me think that, you know, like we call Hatter a marshmallow, I'm still trying to figure out what to say for this hurt locker, because it guts us. It's almost a Jack the Ripper kind of thing, except it's emotion, you know? I mean, it's a really powerful thing to make people be able to feel as deeply as you do in, well, other poems, but especially your hurt locker. And there's really not all that many words there to affect how we feel so powerfully. So, like, bravo.
Thanks, Doug.
Absolutely. And Sky, since your Hurt Locker is your least favorite place on earth, what are your thoughts?
Oh, my God. It's like I have a love-hate relationship with this folder. I love the poems, but I hate to state that they're there. But I love them in the same way. It's like a love-hate. But it's a terrible place to be when you're in a position where someone, when you're trying and another person is turning phrases and manipulating and gaslighting and making you feel like you did something wrong, especially when the person is very compassionate, because then it feels like a failure. And it's kind of like that idea where you say, I can do nothing right. When you're trying to do everything for someone, yet they're turning everything that you do against you. And that's what I see in this piece. I see manipulation. I see turn of phrases, and I see gaslighting. And I see emotional abuse, really, when you think about it, because you're making the other person feel like they're doing something wrong, that they're not enough, that they're failing, and moreover, that they're hurting you. And even though that person is the one doing the damage, and that's quite terrible. It was beautifully written. I do like the fact that, I forget who said it now, maybe Pretty Bird, that it could be read very snarky if you were reading it on your own. But then when you get to that point where that realization, this is not how it is. It's the other way around. And then your perspective changes in the piece. I'm glad I stayed up for it. It was excellent. And someone sent me the poem. I'm putting you guys to work today.
Thanks, Sky.
Thank you.
And now you see why I wanted to close my show with that, because we went through a lot of different nefarious myths, but we only slightly touched on the coolness of people in that one-on-one kind of romantic relationship where they are all about, you know, making you feel bad so they feel better. The ones that because they can't tell the truth, they tell you that everything you say is a lie. The ones that project and refuse to see that they have a part in whatever the problem is, because it's never just one-sided. It's misperceptions on both sides, exacerbated usually by one over the other. And then these are the same people that go back to their group of people or their family or whatever. He's so mean to me. Can you believe what he said to me? I was like, yeah.
The predominant insult is you've got everybody fooled.
Yeah, like that you're a nice guy.
Right. Everyone that says you're a nice guy, everyone that says, you know, whatever, you've got them all fooled.
Yeah.
It can't be me. It can't be me. They're all wrong. Everybody's been, you've got everybody fooled.
Because, you know, it's always the rest of the universe at large. There's never any blame on the person, ever. But I like this view of, or this take on A Wicked Heart. And, this breaks me, but I am on that whole delusions of adequacy, I might have to steal that. Or, you know, ask you very nicely to borrow it. Because it's brilliant and it's sparking things, and I have not been sparked a whole lot lately, so I'm going to take it where I can. And I'm
going to work home with it.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. So it is that time. You guys are awesome. Thank you for sharing time. It is probably the best I have felt in about 2 weeks since I got my sick little puppy. And I'm a worrywart, and so this absolutely took my mind off of it. And I just appreciate all of you writing, and the discussion is my favorite part, and you guys are fabulous. So thank you. And I will see you guys, well, next time on my show, hopefully, and before then on your guys' show. So until, I guess,
we're
gonna
get the
beginning of June. Exactly. Thank you very much. Get the flock out of here. And I will catch you guys next time. Good night, everyone.
Great show. Love and respect.
Thank you so much. Love and respect. Good night.